Hello everyone, this is Kiran Mandral and I'm here with Shanali Shroff. Welcome to yet another episode of Not Your Auntie. Today we're going to talk about how Indians are spending money and they're hell-bent on spending it. They are buying luxury goods. India's become one of the largest markets of luxury products, and yet we live in a nation of paradoxes. We're having huge weddings and yet there is another side of India. What do you think about this dichotomy that we're living in?
So firstly, yes, I mean, it's there for everyone to see. Even if you're living under a rock in India by now, you would have noticed that bigger cars, larger homes, bigger diamonds, the luxury market, as you know, has expanded so much that there is no luxury brand that is aiming to come to India or isn't already here. That also explains why Deepika Padukone became the brand ambassador for Louis Vuitton, because the whole world, we are the next China. In fact, China is now a story that's finished, right? And to that end, you are right. This is a different kind of India shining moment. We today have the third largest number of billionaires in the world.
We had 9 billionaires in 2010, if I'm not mistaken. Today we have 119.
Yeah.
And we are increasing the number of millionaires in the country by 70 per day.
Yeah. So, I mean, there you go, 70 per day. And surely none of them are podcasters. But here's the thing that I think a lot of people have a problem with the way we are spending money. And Indians are splurging a lot on weddings, as you know. And across, you know, the other day, the contractor who recently worked on some furniture items in my house went to Rajasthan for his daughter's wedding. And he said to me that we had to create different sets for different days, different backdrops for different days. So what I'm trying to say is that it's percolating. It's happening everywhere, from the Ambanis who are right at the top, who've had this wedding that has got the world to sit up and take notice of us. Sonia Falero in the New York Times compared it to King George V's coronation and how that was celebrated across colonies, which is true. I was saying this to somebody the other day that this is really like the days of the Raja and the Rani and the, you know, the prince and getting married, whether you looked at the jewelry or the way they looked after guests, the entire extravaganza that was created is nothing less than what might have happened 100, 500 years ago when there were still kings and queens in the country.
But this is the new royalty of India.
But they are the new royalty of India. And I mean, in a way, they are a national asset. Look at the number of jobs they create. Okay.
I'm all too fine. I mean, it's lovely you have the wealth and you create all the jobs by putting up such a show. And this is only the pre-wedding. I'm really wondering what the wedding is going to be like.
Sure.
What scale that would be like. My only concern, Shanali, is that when you put up something of this lavishness, which is great, but you can afford it. There are those who can't afford it. And it's percolating down, as you said, across all segments. There are people taking out loans. There are young brides who come from middle-class families demanding Sabyasachis.
Sure.
Where does this end?
Firstly, this started right from the time movie stars started getting married with their Sabyasachi clothes. I don't think this was the trend started by any industrialist family.
Mm-hmm.
Social media has had a big role to play. People are flaunting their wealth because now they can post a picture about it.
Okay. So it is a more display-oriented flaunt.
It is, because we come from in a country where for so long we've not had access to luxuries. I am not saying that I would personally indulge in any of this.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm just, since we are discussing this, I'm saying what I'm making a case for these people. This is a mindset thing. It's not my mindset, but I can think on their behalf and tell you where they are coming from. They're thinking for the longest time in India, there was no access to luxury. When we were growing up, there were only 2 to 3 cars on the road. There was a Contessa and then there was a Fiat and there was an Ambassador. And, you know, these were the days of the licensed Raj. Our economy opened up, but yet luxury brands were cagey. Indians were still educating themselves. Now, after having traveled the world, India's enjoying this little boom. You go to any shopping mall, you see people walking out with so many bags. The other day, a friend of mine and I were saying to each other, what has happened during COVID? How have people made so much money? You know, we are looking, we are closely resembling the Japanese tourists of the 90s and the Chinese tourists of the past two decades.
And yes, that has happened definitely. There has been a great influx of, I don't know, money, wealth, the desire to show it off, to live the luxury life. But, you know, post-COVID and post-demon, there have been people who have been, in such bad straits.
Kiran, now, you know, I know of somebody who was unboxing a Birkin when our labor force was walking back to their cities during COVID.
Yeah.
And I thought that was tone deaf. And I'm not defending these people. What I am saying is it's their money. They want to spend it. Why not? Today, when I throw a birthday party for my child, the guy who tends to my garden or the domestic who help me work in my home, they might think that this is really extravagant. How can they do this? So it's all relative.
It's all relative. That's right.
So if people have money and they want to, spend it a certain way, well, good for them. I wouldn't do it, but each to their own in that sense. And there's a little national pride in doing that now. I noticed that.
There is? You find that happening?
You know, I remember long ago, I was in a VAT queue at Heathrow. And I was standing in the queue for some paltry sum of money. Those days, you could still get VAT at the end of your trip holiday in the UK. Now they phased it out. Now you can't get your VAT back. So I was standing just for a couple hundred pounds. I'm not joking that there were hordes of Chinese people, tourists, in the same queue as me with bags that they had to, obviously, you have to reveal your shopping at the VAT queue to show what is it that you've purchased, from very expensive watches, you name it. Rolex was the cheapest of the lot, to all sorts of luxury brands. So these guys would take their VAT back in cash. There were wads of cash they used to walk away with. And I actually felt, oh my God, I'm walking away with these three crisp little notes and these guys are walking away with wads of cash. So I think that this is all cyclical also. I don't think the Indian economy will continue to be this robust, say 40, 50 years from now. But we are riding the wave, and we have a statistician here with us, a proxy statistician. Sid, can you take us over some of the numbers?
So India has, they've come from 10th to 5th position in the GDP list. Now they have the 5th highest GDP in the world currently.
5th highest GDP.
That is the figure. That's the figure that we wanted. So now, when you have that kind of GDP, you have got to spend it on something. By the way, our luxury market alone is projected to generate a revenue of 7.86 billion. So in defense of these people who are splurging like this, at the end of the day, jobs are being created.
Jobs are being created, but the inequality, look at the stats. Top 1% of the population has over 40% of the wealth, according to Oxfam.
Yep, it's true.
And
you don't have to go far to look at that. From every apartment in Bombay, you can see a slum.
You can see the slum. And I keep wondering, Shonali, how far have we gone from, the pre-liberalization era or the Gandhian precepts that we grew up with, of simplicity and living your life and simple living, high thinking. We still have some billionaires who are preaching that.
But few and far between. There's Azim Premji and there are the Murthys.
The Murthys.
The torchbearers for,
simple living and high thinking.
Yeah.
But for
very,
the most...
Very, very admirable, I have to say. Yeah. I know that they are lampooned a lot, especially Narayan Murthy and Sudha Murthy. I don't get it. Again, just as somebody has decided to spend their wealth a certain way and do some major destination wedding in, Abu Dhabi or wherever. Now, of course, the government is encouraging people to do all destination weddings in India. But I'm saying that people are splurging so much at the wedding invitations that they send out are so expensive. And just as you may find that vulgar, right? People are finding this extra simplicity also vulgar. I don't get it. Are people never happy with other people and how they live?
I think it is not the vulgar. I think it comes across as performative sometimes.
So one is performative, one is vulgar.
So there is no middle line? Is that what we are... as a people, as onlookers looking onto this?
I'm saying that when the boom that India's experiencing right now, we've never witnessed this ever before.
Mm.
People are in the throes of, they're in a rapturous state. It's like a teenager who was grounded for a month. And now you're like, okay, here, take some money and your punishment is over. And now go out and enjoy. He's going to get smashed and buy his friends burgers and alcohol. And you know the works. I'm just saying that India is like that teenager.
Mm.
And people will be... I mean, I read a wonderful, wonderful book on the Murthys and their lives.
Yeah, you did. Chitra, you did that conversation.
Chitra Banerjee, I had Chitra, a conversation yeah. with her. And, you know, this is exactly the same time that, you know, Twitter was basically making all sorts of memes about the Murthys as a couple. But look at the philanthropy.
Yes, you can't.
I don't mind if they're performative. Look at all the good work that they're doing.
The good work is there. The performativeness is there. And I think it's also a little bit of resentment that creeps in when we lampoon them. That apart, sometimes I think it does go too far, honestly.
It is, but I'm saying it, who are we to decide?
Who are we to decide? We are the Sudha onlookers.
Sudha Murthy deprived her daughter of a Cinderella costume mm-hmm. for an annual day. Akshata Murthy was 13 or 14. They had already created tremendous wealth by then as a family. And Akshata, all she wanted was to perform the role of Cinderella in a school play. And a teacher said that, why don't you get a dress? You know, typically when we're growing up, our schools would order, instruct our parents to buy the costume. And the mother realized the cost of the dress in Bangalore. And she said, no, I will not splurge. Akshata lost that role mm-hmm. because of her inability. So I thought that was a bit extreme.
It was
Certainly. Definitely.
It was a trauma wound and that the child will not heal from.
And I can see why Akshata Murthy is such a fashionista.
She's right? carrying that over. She's
carrying that over. So, I mean, I'm saying that Sudha Murthy was happier depriving her children and making them live a certain way because that's what gave her peace of mind. Mm-hmm. Somebody else who's having a big wedding at the Atlantis or whatever, name any big resort or destination, or Jaipur, Rambagh, and getting elephants and all, and Dula and Bharat, they're getting joy from that. So, like they say, what goes off your father?
Nothing goes off anybody's father. Anyway, my poor father's already gone, but God rest his soul. But honestly, while, you know, it's like, you know, the royalty would have the Panem and circuses for the masses yeah. in the year. I feel this is Panem and circuses for us right now. This display, this over-the-top events.
But people are hooked. They're people enjoying it.
They're hooked.
They're attending strangers' weddings online because they're just seeing stuff they've never seen, watched before.
This all distracts us from what we should really be talking about, Srinali. Look at the iniquity in our country. Look at the poorest of the poor. Look at the medical system. Every middle-class family in this country is one critical illness away from being bankrupt.
Sure.
There's a lot of philanthropy.
There's no social security.
No social security, nothing.
A vast majority of people. I'm with you in all of this. But do you think that the very families who are indulging in luxury shopping, buying swanky cars and apartments in high rises, do you think that if they were holding themselves back from these elaborate purchases, do you think they'd be writing off checks to all sorts of orphanages in India and to all sorts of, you know, non-governmental organizations and not-for-profit bodies? No.
In an ideal world, yes, but definitely not.
No, but that's
not
what I'm saying. So actually, this is a very interesting logic, an argument made by my older daughter. A few years ago, I caught my cook weeping in the kitchen one day. And I said, what happened? And he said that his father was in debt and the father was putting pressure on him. And he felt sorry that his dad in his old age had to bear such a big debt. And he said, I don't know how I can ever take care of that. So I said, of course, let us know and we'll help you. And I think everybody in India, shouldn't really count pennies when it comes to being generous with the domestic help, because this is the least we can do. Okay, you don't need to really do big charity. At least charity begins at home, take care yeah. of these people. That year, it occurred to me that such a small debt, such a tiny, tiny debt, that is giving this man sleepless nights, it's killing him from within, is possibly the size of, is the amount that, you know, we spend on few basic luxury items. And so that year I swore that I will not buy any luxury items for as long as I am feeling this way. I was struck with tremendous guilt. Mm-hmm. 1 year passed, 2 years passed, 3 years passed. I'm not joking. I did not indulge in any luxury or jewelry shopping in those years. So one day I was admiring a bag at a store in London, and my daughter said, Mama, it's so lovely and you haven't bought a bag for yourself in the longest while. And now we are young, when we're ready to inherit, you've stopped buying bags. So I said, no, I feel really bad that, you know, this is the kind of money our cook was struggling to raise and it just doesn't justify my spend. And she said, in the most simple manner, the child's honesty, but not like if you don't buy this bag, you're going to immediately give that money away to that cook. Take care of him and then go buy your bag, right? So I'm just saying that all these people, while indulging in luxury, if they did not, it's not like they'd be setting up charitable institutions.
I get your point. I just worry about, we keep talking about...
Flaunting it has its issues, yes.
Flaunting it, throwing it in the face of the people who don't have
Indeed.
It. Just seems very heartless at the time.
I think it encourages, I feel, at some level, resentment and crime.
I understand
that aspect. I completely am with you on that.
But look, you know, in a country like ours, where the unemployment figures are so drastic, the youth are out there, they're not getting jobs. Recently, there was an opening at a job for a firm called Cognizant in Pune.
Mm-hmm.
It was a job for a junior developer, one job. It was a walk-in interview. Over 3,000 people lined up from the morning for that one job.
Hmm.
When you look at the jobs for
recruitment
for the police forces,
yeah,
or for the
armed
forces. Look at
forces.
The numbers. Look at the numbers of people who turn up in hordes. There are no jobs out there.
But then these people who are creating, doing wealth creation in the country are doing job creation also.
They're doing job creation.
You know, you just wish that they wouldn't be
so in your face about it.
I understand that. But, you know, it's like, they finally have access to everything and they want to enjoy it for a bit. I'm sure the euphoria will subside in a few years.
You know, in the past...
You know, it'll be self-correcting in a little while from now.
In the past, we did have billionaires and millionaires. We did have the Tatas.
What was the ratio? Our genius statistician here will know.
We had the Tatas. We had the Dalmias. We had
the Vadias.
The Birlas. We had them. They lived their lives quietly, gently, and they lived lavish lives.
They were generational wealth. Their forebears were already wealthy by the time the British left India, or soon after.
Okay.
All the people who are now indulging in this kind of
display
and consumerism are people who have not had a chance to enjoy the wealth they've toiled day and night to create.
Okay. But must they be so in your face about
it? Well, you know, Sonia Falero said in her article in the New York Times, it's the survival of the richest. It is true.
Survival of the richest.
It is true. I agree. But you know, again, I think everyone should do their bit to help society. And then if they want to buy grotesque red Ferraris or whatever they want to buy, I have no problem with that. Mm. I think we should all in our own way do our bit and then live our lives and enjoy it. Why not? I mean, have you been to any of the Middle Eastern countries recently? Have you seen how they live and spend? And they do a lot of charity, by the way. It's a very big facet of Islam.
It is a big facet of Islam. And I wish we as people also... did a bit. I'm sure they do, a lot of them. It just worries me because this is what I see the children growing up with. As you, my son, when you go to him, you know, he goes and he picks up an Armani shirt or Boss or something, and or Superdry, and these are not cheap shirts, t-shirts. And you tell them, why do you need so many? I used to go to Fashion Street when I was young and pick up. And that was your time.
So Kiran, by this very same logic,
that was
your
time. Your
housemaid, if she knows the price of your t-shirt, right? She may say that, you know, this is...
my monthly salary.
This is, yeah. So I'm saying this is all relative. So what you are finding vulgar or hard to digest, somebody else is looking at your life and thinking that and my life and thinking that. So I'm just putting things in perspective, you know?
It's a difficult perspective to come to terms with, though.
Yeah, but listen, I mean, when we were growing up in India, my closet had such few clothes. And I'm obsessed with clothes. I am not an obsessive shopper, but clothes is something that...
that's important.
As women, we all, I mean, we are the same and whatever. And I was thinking that, how did I get by in the India of those days? You know, when we had to go to a tailor.
Buy the material first.
Yeah, buy the material first. And then Soviet Today magazine was a magazine. Russia was India's very, very close friend. And we had a magazine called Soviet Today. And my mother would identify styles from there and then buy fabric and take it to the tailor or the seamstress and say that, you know, can you just copy this outfit? So if a person who's grown up like me today is given this choice of so many clothes, naturally I want to make up for
all those years of deprivation.
Absolutely.
Yes,
I just find that these big wedding invites are a waste because they get chucked. All those boxes that come to you with the elaborate printing and cards. Now a lot of things have turned digital, thank God. But splurging money on wedding invites that eventually you can't even use because somebody else's name is engraved on it.
I think Dia Mirza had a lovely green wedding. I don't know about a wedding invite, but I wish more celebrities went in for
it. Why did she send a cabbage as an invite?
That I don't know. I never received it.
Yeah.
But I wish more celebrities went in for,
Yeah.
In weddings that could be copied and looked upon as aspirational.
I actually attended a beautiful wedding in Goa a month ago. And these are people who can afford to have a flashier wedding, but they're not flashy people. So they had a very intimate wedding. And, nowadays when people do weddings, they want imported flowers. Everywhere you see, they're the most exotic flowers, but they had used only local Indian flowers. There was a lot of Genda and Indian rose everywhere and chameli. And
that is quite brave of them to have Genda.
I know. Imagine it.
Genda. How do I say it?
Genda is a marigold and Genda is a hippo.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much. I doubt somebody's hanging hippos on the wedding mandap.
Oh, yo. Peter will just get up.
You know that hippos are absolutely carnivorous animals.
Really?
And completely crazy in the head and they're not cute at all. So if you remember hippo from Madagascar and you think hippos are cute, they're not cute.
With those teeth, they're carnivorous.
Absolutely. They can demolish a crocodile and all sorts of wild animals within minutes.
Wonderful. I will never go to pet a hippo in my life now. Thank you for telling me this.
Yeah.
Yeah. The river horse.
Horse? Really?
The river horse. Hippopotamus.
Unlike a horse at all, but yeah.
A very well-fed horse.
I like the way our conversations meander into a fair bit of, zoology. So, coming back to this wedding that I was talking about, the invitations were digital. And everything was simple and intimate. There was no effort to show off or flash or impress you with, the grand experience we've created. And that was their choice. It was very nice. It was the kind of wedding I would like to have for my children if they don't elope and marry first, which would be a better idea. So I don't have to do all the hard work. But there are some people who are still doing that.
Yeah, that's nice.
With much joy and simplicity and, a fuss-free affair. Even for guests, when there are these la-di-da weddings,
The theme weddings,
just to get ready for the themes and to show up for all the functions. It's like in stressful. That kind of a budget, many people can get married again themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've told my son, you have to elope and get married. I can't do this.
Okay, good. Giving all my friends are saying the same thing to their kids. Elope.
So the next generation is just going to elope. So there'll be no fancy weddings.
Yeah, or go to like a tiny little island somewhere.
It has to be in India because...
Now it has to be in India.
Yeah, we have to do India. We'll do Lakshadweep. And we'll ruin Lakshadweep.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. There's Andamans also.
Would you marry your husband again in a ceremony? You know, that's a thing.
Yeah.
On the 25th wedding anniversary, a lot of people
renew their vows. 25th. Not the 50th.
No, the 50th. Who lives that long?
People do live here.
Okay, I know, but you're taking a chance. 25th is...
25th, you can still decide whether you want to kill each other or not, no?
Would you renew your vows, I'm asking you?
Why
and
not?
Throw a party or something? Because if you intend to, there are 2-3 places I'd like to suggest.
I finished with the 25th.
I went to Kodi Canal. Can you do a Kodi Canal?
Yeah, Kodi Canal. Yeah. Okay. But I finished the 25th. So I should wait for the 50th now.
Mine is my 25th is this year.
So you can do yours. Would you renew your vows?
No. I find that performative.
Very soppy, no?
It's just performative.
It's just very soppy. Yeah. I mean, now you're stuck with this guy. Why do you have to keep repeating it? And he's stuck with you. Why do you have to keep telling the world that you're stuck with each other?
No, not in that way. I'm like,
I don't find it romantic. Very honest.
Some people do actually. I know of somebody, she repeated her vows with her husband and 1 year later she got divorced. The vows were repeated in the Maldives.
Sorry.
Yeah.
At least she got a holiday out of it.
Maybe she wanted to do like a proper big wedding in the Maldives before. You know, every woman has this image of herself on a wedding day and maybe she had some blue seas in the backdrop.
Yeah, there's no point in, you know, getting your vows renewed and, you know, because your skin is not up to mark the way it was in your first wedding, and you're going to see pictures again and feel really bad about yourself. So,
I know.
So, I mean, I'm not getting any vows renewed, man.
Okay.
Not unless I can get it something time machine to turn me back to 25. No.
All right. You can do it with a veil, like one of those Rajasthani brides. You know that story, right? This woman in the veil got married to the wrong guy at the wedding.
See, the universe always conspires. Yeah. The universe is protecting her from whoever it was.
Yeah.
And have you seen that about, you know, they do so much makeup on the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And when finally the makeup gets washed off, the groom gets a scare and then runs
yeah,
off.
Yeah, we've done an episode on that. We've done one episode on that, yes. Kiran, we've chatted so much in the past 1 year that we have no recollection of what was in real time and what was recorded on the podcast. Yeah. Right. So, coming back to luxury in India, the car wait time for any of the luxury cars is now 10 months to a year.
Yes.
And a lot of restaurants, you know, the other day, I attended a dinner hosted by the Japanese government.
Wonderful.
They had flown down all sorts of fish and food materials produced from Japan.
Fugu? Fugu?
The fugu, no.
No?
No. I doubt Indians will try to attempt fugu. They don't even, I mean, that's a bit, you know, that acquired taste. But they had a couple of Japanese local restaurants from India put up stalls, but they were given, everything was by invitation. So all the guests, you didn't have to pay to eat. And it was fantastic. And the Japanese ambassador was receiving guests. And there was a woman in a, you know, kimono serving sake. Look at this. I mean, on the one hand, we are complaining that Indians have become so in your face and so flashy. But on the other hand, now, all sorts of countries are looking at making a foray and introducing us to the local cuisine. Yesterday, I attended a dinner by the Shiva Som from Thailand. They want to expand, invite Indians to come and try their wellness retreats outside of India, in Thailand and elsewhere. So everyone is looking at us and trying to woo us. There is a Cartier dinner in Bombay next week.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm talking about all mega brands. I'm not trying to name drop. I'm trying to tell you that everyone is now thinking that China's story is over.
Mm-hmm.
India is the big ticket. India is no longer the land of elephant rides and snake charmers alone and exotic places to pose with Rajasthani women. While that is still very much a part of India. But the India growth story has everyone sit up and take notice. And of course, I'm still shocked by the way people are showing off their wealth, okay? But have money will show, I guess. That's their philosophy.
And I guess we just have to get used to it, like it or lump it. You know, Shanali, actually, I've been thinking about it and I think not all flashy people get away with showing off this stuff.
If it's ill-begotten flash, then surely.
No, not necessarily ill-begotten. Just even flash that is acquired by all legitimate means. I mean, if you look at it, you have Nirav Modi, who was ill-begotten. You have Vijay Mallya, who had a perfectly thriving business.
But he expanded too quickly. He made some wrong business decisions.
But
yes.
He was flashy. He was in your face. He lived life king size. He lived his brand. You have Harshad Mehta, who had the first ever Lexus in our country and posed with it. And we all know what happened to him.
Oh my God, Lexus used to be such a big deal. Then no one even talks about a Lexus. Lexus, my God, it's such a mid-segment car. Uh-huh. Yeah.
We've come a long way.
Yeah, we really have. See, there you go. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So, Kiran, the moral of the story is that after this podcast, when we become billionaires, we will not be flashy.
We will not be flashy.
There you go. You will see us in our simple...
plain.
Yeah, you will still see us in our khadi clothes singing Vaishnav Jantu. So... to that spirit.
We'll see you next week on Not Your Auntie.